Money sometimes is the best accountability partner, man, because I invested heavily in myself when I started podcasting. I was just like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. And I invested close to 20 grand in like masterminds, coaching, courses, info products, like anything that I could get my hands on that would teach me how to do this thing properly.
I'm here today with Travis Chappell. He is the founder and CEO of Guestio.com. I'm host of the top-ranked podcast, Travis Make Friends.
One thing I love about podcasting, by the way, is like you do not have to be the expert to start a show. You can just be the person who helps people discover the expert. I was the captain of the ship. I was just here to lead a group of people who wanted to go to the same destination that I was going to. I didn't know how to get there. So let me invite people onto my show, ask them questions, we can all get there together.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Travis Chappell. Travis, what's good, man? Excited to have you.
How you doing, dude? Thanks for having me.
Dude, I'm fantastic. And I haven't told you this yet. I want to tell a little story. It might be something I've told the listener before, but you were actually a part of it, my friend. So
All right, let's hear it.
It had to have been like 2019 or 2020. You guested in Brad Lee's closer school. And
yeah,
you brought up an image, and I had been podcasting since 2016. I had a MuseCast, but you had brought up an image of podcasting being a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah.
And it clicked. And at a similar time, like the pandemic hit, I got furloughed and I started a Rochester, New York business podcast, which is now rebranded to something bigger, a Rochester, New York business podcast with that thought. It's a Swiss Army knife. I can meet people. I can create content. I can have conversations I'm having anyways. And yeah. I just wanted to, you know, credit where credit's due. That one image played a big role, man. Played a big role.
They say, you know, a picture's worth a thousand or a thousand words, right? So, sometimes that's all it takes is seeing like something like that, and it just makes you go like, oh, yeah, it is a lot bigger than just like an online radio show. You know what I mean? It is more powerful. It's more unique. It has the ability to affect multiple parts of your lives in multiple different ways, and frankly, when I started, I had no idea that it did any of that stuff either. You know, it was just like bought the knife, using it for the knife. And then you start realizing that it's got a bunch of other stuff on there. So, yeah.
And we'll dissect this deeply in a moment. I'll introduce you because not everybody knows Travis yet. But
sure.
Let's make friends with Travis. He is the founder and CEO of Guestio.com, premier guest and show booking marketplace, which I am a member. I've both paid to be on shows and got paid to be on shows on Guestio. So it's kick ass. Host of the top ranked podcast, Travis Make Friends. Can't talk today. My friend Travis makes friends, renowned for his expertise in sales consulting, relationship building, content creation, transition from a door to door sales rep to a respected thought leader. You've been in Forbes, Entrepreneur, the whole shabam. So let's start door-to-door sales rep. So I imagine it wasn't a pretty journey to the top. Like I list your bio, it sounds like you're doing fantastic, but you started door-to-door?
Yeah, dude. I was really just looking for something to do out of college. I grew up in a unique circumstance. It was a cultish type community. I call it more like a bubble. So to explain what I mean by bubble is I went to church and school on the same campus. And I went to that school from kindergarten all the way through senior year of college. So I graduated kindergarten, eighth grade, high school, college on one campus, which was also where I went to church. So like all my friends were all the same, my teachers and youth leaders, and it was all intermingled and mixed together. There was no like church life and home life and school life. It was just kind of all one big thing. And so by the time I graduating college, I basically realized that I didn't really want to be in ministry. And that's all that school has to offer is you know, it's ministerial school, so it's essentially like a seminary school. And it's within just that one religious sect. So it's not a real seminary school where you can go and use, there's a bunch of different people from different denominations and backgrounds learning different things about different religion and things like that. It's like you go there, you learn one thing and you agree with that one thing and everybody agrees on that same thing. And if you disagree, it's not like a, oh, well, you disagree with us, that's okay. It's a, you disagree with us, get out of our school. You know what I mean? So by the time I was graduating, I realized I didn't really want to be in ministry. And I was graduating with a double major in Bible and church ministries. And so, and it was unaccredited. So like you couldn't use it. I mean, you could barely use it for anything to begin with, but the fact that it was unaccredited made it completely, I mean, just as useless as the paper it was printed on. So when I got out of college, it was like, well, if I don't want to do that, then like, what am I going to do? You know, I don't have any degree to go do anything else, you know? And I was doing door-to-door sales in college to like make extra money and save up and things like that. Cause I had gotten engaged and married before I walked and got my diploma. And, you know, that stuff costs money. So you can't survive. You can't cash checks on faith. You know what I mean? So, I was doing door-to-door in college just to like make extra money to afford an engagement ring, stuff like that. And I did pretty well with it. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the like competitive nature. I enjoyed the leadership portion of it. It was like a few of us got hired at the beginning when this company came in and started recruiting people. And me and one or two other guys just like did really well. And we ended up with our own teams. And so by the time I was, you know, junior in college, I was running a team of like 25 sales reps and we were doing really well. We're the number one team in that market. And that market was the number one market in that company. And that company at the time was the number two residential solar installer in the country. So we were doing like pretty well. I was making decent money. And then when I was leaving college, I was just and figuring out that like, I don't want to go down this ministry path. It just made sense to keep doing door to door because it was just like, I know that I'm good at this. I know that I can, you know, I've proven that I can support myself and make a living doing this. And so that's what I did, dude. I did for, probably 5 or 6 years total, including college, sold solar, sold alarms, sold, water purification systems. Just about anything I get my hands on, as long as they paid me, I sold it, you know.
Why exactly do you think you're so darn good at that?
That is a good question. I don't know. I mean, I know that I'm really competitive and I know that, I like to make money and I had this kind of entrepreneurial itch since I was a kid. So I think kind of combining those things, it's not like I started and was immediately good at it. I think I was a little bit maybe naturally better than some people are. But I also just cared enough to get good at it, whereas a lot of other people didn't. So a lot of people would like credit it to my religious background, which I would agree with that to a certain extent, because we were knocking on doors when I was, you know, 8 years old, inviting people to come to church. We did like every Saturday at our church, we had something called soul winning, quote unquote, soul winning. And we'd go to the community and knock on doors and invite people to come to church, try to lead them to the Lord and the sinner's prayer on their doorstep and try to get them to come to church and get baptized and join the church and all that stuff. So I was doing a lot of communication growing up. So I was at preaching camp when I was in seventh grade. I was like 12 years old. It was like a 5-day, essentially a college course. It was like, it's their homiletics 101. So their homiletics, the study of preaching. So the Bible college did a summer camp and, you know, people would send their kids to the summer camp and it was called preaching camp. It was literally just, it was a week long course. That's a college level homiletics course. And they taught it in a week and they did it like an interim. So you were there for like 6-8 hours a day and you'd get up and preach at the end of it. And so like, I started, you know, talking in front of people when I was a kid. So I think that those things were helpful in terms of communication, effectiveness, you know, persuasion styles and stuff like that I was learning at the time, but I didn't label it as those things, obviously. In my head, it was just like, I'm preaching, you know, but looking back at it now, there's obviously a lot of other skills that were being used there. However, when I say that I don't think that was the reason that I was better at sales than others, it's because I had a lot of friends that grew up the same exact way that I did. and they got the same exact door-to-door job as I did. Cause it was like the job to get at that college. Because at that college it was unaccredited college. So that means there's no grants, there's no public funding, there's no school loans. If you're there, you're paying for school in real time as you're going to school there. And so you needed, like, everybody had a job, you know. I didn't actually have to get one. My parents paid for my school, so I was lucky. But I still wanted a job because I wanted to make money. And so that became like the job to have on campus because it came with a base pay. But then you can make commissions and start making like pretty good money. So I was making not like crazy amount of money, but I was making, I don't know, like $6,000-$7,000 a month when I was in school. So I was like, but 19, 20 years old, you think you're rolling, yeah. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So there's a bunch of kids that like wanted that job. And so a lot of my friends that grew up the same way that I did also got that job and just couldn't cut it, just couldn't swing it. Whether it was just a factor of too much rejection or not enough skill or didn't make it to their first paycheck fast enough. I don't know exactly what it was, but yeah, for whatever reason, man, I was better at it and I liked doing it. And yeah, I liked being competitive and I liked seeing those paychecks get higher and higher the more that I worked and the better that I got at the job. And so those were all helpful. My dad was also a real estate agent my whole life. So I grew up in the house of 100% commissioned salesperson. So I think maybe that was helpful as well. So yeah, it was kind of a melting pot of you know, ideas that I have on why I had some sort of like a proclivity to become successful with it. But yeah, your guess is as good as mine, really.
Yeah. It sounds like a melting pot of micro skills mixed with coachability and willingness to get rejected, but we could do 10 hours on just that. I'm curious, a silly question. So in an hour, how many doors could you knock?
At the beginning, it was quite a lot. And that's kind of what I mean by these types of skills is like, that's kind of what I meant by like your time to your first paycheck. So when I say that, it's kind of like almost a measurement of or predictor of how successful you're going to be, especially in door to door, because it's such a high level of rejection. Mm. And it's just not, there's not a lot of people that can take that much rejection. It's like, you know, door to door and like telemarketing, those two are just really, really cold form of selling. And it's just difficult to hack it. And you gotta make it through. And when you get to that first paycheck and you see the numbers, then it's every no becomes a little bit easier at that point. You're like, oh man, I used to have to do XYZ to make $1,000 and I made $1,000 this week, just knocking on doors for like 3-4 hours a day. Like, that's cool. I wonder what would happen if I got better at it. I wonder what happened if I knocked more doors, you know? So time to first paycheck was a pretty big indicator for us is if people were going to make it, you know, beyond the first week and a half of working. And so, yeah, I was one of the ones that did. So when I first started, it was, you know, I'd knock, it's tough to say, but I don't know, 30 something, maybe something like that, 25, 30 doors an hour, something like that. But that number kept decreasing the better that I got because, you know, you get into an engaging conversation and you talk, you end up knocking on fewer doors, but you end up making more money. Your dollar value per door you knock on increases. And so with that increase comes an increase in time because you get better at holding conversations with people, that maybe wouldn't have had a conversation with you if you weren't as good, you know, things like that. So toward the end, when I was like doing a lot, when I was doing really well, doing knocking on doors and I was really engaged in the activity, you know, it was when I was selling alarms, we would go to neighborhoods and then me and a couple guys on my team, we would just like cherry pick. Mm-hmm. So we got good enough at telling certain things about neighborhoods, telling certain things about particular houses in neighborhoods, to where, you know, we could get it down to, oh, we'd knock in 10 doors and you're going to come away with a deal, you know, on most days. Obviously it's not an exact science, but yeah, the majority of the time it's like, yeah, you can knock 8-10 doors and we're going to come out with one or two deals a piece if we pick the right ones, you know what I mean? So, yeah, the number kept shrinking over time, but that's because the skill got better over time.
Dude, Travis, this is what I love about you. I'm a fan of story and I'm a fan of nuance. So I appreciate the in-depth response to a silly question, but there is a specific reason why I asked how many doors you knocked, and we'll just go with the number 25. So in an hour, you can knock 25 doors. Mm-hmm. Then you transition to podcasting where you have one conversation in that hour, possibly.
Yes.
That's a big difference. Why did you go from knocking doors, shaking lots of hands, to the more deliberate but way less efficient medium of a podcast? Where did that come into play?
Yeah, it for me was not a factor like of selling. It wasn't any of the there was nothing comparable about it. It was just that I was getting sick of knocking on doors, and I'd been doing it for several years, and I kept telling myself and people that were hiring me, like, I don't want to continue knocking on doors, you know? And then they would offer me a deal and I'd be like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. You know what I mean? So I kept kind of just almost being this hired gun. And then after a while was like, it was mostly 100% commission. So it's not like they could tell me when I had to work, but also, you know, with certain spiffs and incentives and bonuses and signing bonuses and different things like that, they could kind of work it into telling me, you know, when I should work and things. So I eventually ended up in water purification just because the commissions were bigger. And I was essentially working for myself at that time. I basically kind of became like a sub dealer, an unofficial sub dealer for another water machine dealer. And so at that time, like, I didn't have to go into the office. I didn't have to like go talk to this person or that person. I just went out whenever I wanted to. I could bring people on if I wanted to or not bring people on. I kind of just did whatever I wanted. And then that was kind of when I made the transition to podcasting, because I was listening to a lot of podcasts at the time. I was just kind of empty. I was not necessarily like empty. I was searching, because I was quote unquote called to the ministry when I was 12 years old. So there was never a period of my life where I was thinking about what I was going to do with the rest of my life. Growing up, it was always going to be ministry. And that's what I thought it was going to be. And that's what I went to college for. And we didn't have like a career counselor at our high school, you know, as you can imagine, we didn't have any of that. So there wasn't somebody coming into us and being like, hey, are you sure this is the path you want to go down? If you do want to go down this path, have you considered any other colleges or universities? Did you take this path? You know, you're going to need these grades. You didn't, like, there was zero of that growing up. So when I got into my early 20s and I was out of college and I was making good money doing doors, it was just like, I didn't enjoy knocking on doors. It was just what I did because I was like, what else am I going to do? You know what I mean? Like, I'm making six figures as a 21-year-old, recently married, recently graduated, door-to-door, 100% commission salesman. If I just got a job, I'd be making like 40 grand a year with my no diploma that doesn't mean anything. Like, why would I do anything different? It doesn't make any sense. And so I started looking for different things that would be able to pay me based on these like different freedom factors that I was looking at. Cause I liked door to door, but I didn't like that it didn't give me location freedom. It gave me time freedom. For the most part, I could work when I wanted to, not work when I didn't want to. The problem was when I didn't work, I didn't get paid. Right. So it did give me some flexibility, some freedom to choose my hours. If I just wasn't feeling it, I didn't have to go out. If something came up and I didn't want to, I can make up for it at a different time, or I could just go out an extra couple hours on Saturday. Like, so I really enjoyed that part. I liked that there's time freedom. Like, there's some financial freedom. Like I said, I was making six figures at 21 with not a ton of bills. You know, I had my, you know, I was married and I had a mortgage, so it wasn't like I was sleeping on my mom's couch type of no bills, but you know, bills were certainly lower at that point in my life. So, had some financial freedom. I could go screw around with some extra money on the weekends, you know, I could pay for my own stuff. I was financially independent, debt-free, had a house, and kind of checking all those boxes. But, you know, at the end of the day, I was just like, I was at least, I've always been somebody that looks in the future. And I don't know exactly where that comes from either, but I knew that at 21 and 22, I was cool with what I was doing. But I fast forwarded a decade, which is, it's crazy now that as I'm out loud telling the story right now, I'm just realizing that like that was a decade ago. I'm 31 now. So looking at it from that perspective, just to be like, man, thank you to 21-year-old Travis making this decision, because at that time I was like, I'm not okay with 31-year-old Travis being in this position. And I'm definitely not okay with 41-year-old Travis being in this position or 51-year-old Travis being in this position. And I knew people who were in that position, who were in their 40s and 50s, still knocking doors, still on the hamster wheel of like, got to go out and get some more money today. And it was just like, and honestly, like it's a fine way to make a living. And there's way worse ways to make a living than door-to-door sales. And so I have some really, really wealthy and rich friends who just did door-to-door their entire career and kept moving up and building teams. And, you know, it can be a very lucrative career. It just is not what I wanted. And I knew that, and I did not know what I wanted. So podcasting became this kind of place where I could go discover, where I could just like listen to fascinating conversations with interesting people who are off the beaten path, and just try to discover what's the next path for me. What does the next, you know, phase of life look like? And so I was looking at it through the lens of freedom. Like, what do I want my life to look like? What do I want my day-to-day to look like? And what does true freedom mean? And I think a lot of people never really clearly define that. And for me, true freedom was like, I want time freedom. I want financial freedom, sure. But I also want location freedom.
Location.
I don't want to have to be in a certain place at a certain time to be able to make money. I'd like to go to Europe for 2 weeks and have more money in my bank account than when I left, type of a thing. Even if it means I work, I'm not saying like I got to go on vacation and not work at all. You know, I wasn't looking for passive income at the time. I was just like, you know, even if I got to post up in a coffee shop in France, it's like that type of work is what I wanted to do. Something that would give me every type of freedom that I was looking for. And so I came across podcasting and started just listening to them. And then after a while I was like, this would be kind of cool. I wonder if podcasters make any money. And I started looking at how much money some of these podcasters are making. I was like, this is insane. You're making $3 million a year off of a podcast business. What does that even mean? How do you make, what is going on here? You know what I mean? So, just fascinated me and took me down that path. And that's when I started my show, probably like a year after that.
So we're going to go through the sloppy, and then in a second, we'll go through the refined, because a lot of listeners.
Real quick, sorry to cut you off. Just to be clear, There was a lot of overlap between my door to door and my podcast career, because I invested heavily in myself when I started podcasting. I was just like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. And I invested close to $20,000 in like masterminds, coaching, courses, info products, like anything that I could get my hands on that would teach me how to do this thing properly. I invested into it, plus my website, plus web podcast equipment, you know, my graphics, logos, like all that stuff. I was $20,000-$25,000 in before I even launched my show, because I was just like, I'm putting a fat deposit down on my future. And you know, money sometimes is the best accountability partner, man. You know, you can say you want to do something all day long, but when you drop $20,000 on something, bet your ass you're going to be trying to make it happen. You know what I mean? So that's how it was for me. And the reason I kept doing door to door during that time is like, I still got to pay my bills. My podcast isn't making any money. And then doing door to door was allowing me to have flexible income in case I wanted to invest more money into the podcast doing something else. So it was like, oh, well, I want to do this thing, but it's going to cost $5,000. It's like, okay, cool. But I'm selling, you know, water machines door to door. It's like, I can go out and make $15,000 in a couple of weeks. If I just like sell a few deals. So, there was a lot of overlap there. It wasn't like I just like completely abruptly stopped doing doors as soon as I started my podcast.
Well, and I think you really touched on it with the chili stew of micro skills that you had been building your entire life to lead you up to that opportunity. You're already a fantastic communicator. You decide to start a podcast, and right now we're in the sloppy, then we'll get to the refined, because people are going to be wondering, how do I get started podcasting as a host or a guest? And they don't have to have the same kind of nosebleeds we had to get started. So you get started. Are you like driving down the street with the AC blowing? Like what did it look like on day one?
For the podcast?
Yes, sir. Podcast, yeah, day one.
It was the opposite of sexy, if that's what you're asking. It was like, it was all I could do to press the launch button. And I was just scared. And even though I had experience in communication, I hated how I sounded. I had never had any experience interviewing anybody. And that was like all I was doing. Cause at the time I was like 24 when I started, and I was starting a podcast on networking, and I didn't know anything about networking. So there wasn't, like, I was not coming at it from this position of being like the expert, the authority, the leader, which is one thing I love about podcasting, by the way, is like, you do not have to be the expert to start a show. You can just be the person who helps people discover the expert. And then it can go happen that way. So, that's all I was. What I call it is like, I was the captain of the ship. I was just here to lead a group of people who wanted to go to the same destination that I was going to. I didn't know how to get there. So let me invite people onto my show, ask them questions, we can all get there together. And so I started the show on networking because that was something that I was very curious to learn about. Because when I left the world that I grew up in, that kind of religious bubble community, I was genuinely starting my network from scratch. I didn't know anybody outside of that world. I'd you know, never even met a millionaire, let alone like had a personal relationship with somebody who was. And I knew like if I have any odds of, or chance of like getting to that level, then I have to completely redefine what it means to connect with people. And I have to learn how to do it. You know, because if it was easy to fill your network with a bunch of millionaires, then why wouldn't everybody be doing that? You know, it's obvious, there's obviously some things that those people are doing that other people aren't doing. You know what I mean? I started reading stuff online and being like, okay, I got to go to the meetup group at the restaurant and I got to go to the chamber of commerce thing, you know? And I end up going to these places and I'm like, where are all the millionaires? You know what I mean? Like, this is just a bunch of like insurance salesmen that are like trying to make their first 100,000 a year. You know what I mean? Like, where are all the millionaires hanging out? It's like, there's clearly something that I don't know about how to connect with high level people. And that's kind of what the show became, was like an exploration into figuring that stuff out. So when I launched the show, man, it was crickets. Nobody cared. I have to think of the time, just because I know I've saw text messages of people talking crap about me that from people that I grew up. So like, I knew that people were talking crap. I knew that people were hoping that it was going to fail. And I knew that I was not going to let it. And so, even at the beginning, it was just like it brought me to this realization that like, I had been training my whole life for that, because, you know, rejection is a part of any form of success that you're ever going to experience. In fact, Guy Raz from How I Built This, he wrote a book called How I Built This. And it was basically like a conglomerate of his findings from interviewing the world's most successful entrepreneurs. And he's interviewing people, you know, that are running like the founder of Calendly, that's like a $20 billion company. You know, like, he's interviewing these massive, massive company founders. And what he said, and I heard him say it multiple times, he said the number one factor by far that is the common denominator between all the successful people that he had talked to was that the most successful people learned how to overcome and deal with rejection. And that's why door-to-door is such a really, you know, is such an amazing way to start your career, because it teaches you so much rejection right off the bat. And everything that you do that's worthwhile is going to involve a lot of rejection. And the podcast was one of those things that included a ton of rejection at the beginning. You know, not a lot of people said yes to interviews. It was difficult to get people scheduled, but I still did it. I still was pumping out 3 interviews a week for years before I changed things up and did something different. So, you know, sometimes just a matter of, can you deal with the rejection, and are you committed enough to the outcome to stick in it during the painful part? Because there's going to be, the painful part's going to exist. I liken it to playing the guitar a lot. Because when I first started playing the guitar, man, I legit had this thought in my head, like, maybe there's just a certain number of people that can't learn the guitar, and I'm one of them. You know, maybe you're just like not, maybe you just have to be gifted in some sort of musical way, because it was frustrating. I was trying to practice, I was trying to get better at it, and like, I couldn't press the strings down. I was learning on an acoustic guitar, and I couldn't, the acoustic guitar strings are steel. It's like, I couldn't press down on the strings hard enough, because the bottom strings in the guitar are really, really fine, really thin steel, you know, strings. And those are the strings that your pinky and ring finger are pushing down on. And it's like, you don't have enough physical strength. And then your skin just forms around the string. It doesn't even push it down. Yeah. And so like, there was so much buzzing. I couldn't form a chord. I couldn't switch to a different chord. I couldn't play. It sounded terrible. It was frustrating as hell. And then what happens over time is your fingers, on the tips of your fingers, they actually form little calluses, and the calluses allow you to push the strings down. First of all, without the pain of shoving the string deep into your skin, but also, allows you to actually, you know, push the string down flush onto the fret, so you can play a chord without it buzzing and sounding terrible. And so after a couple of months, 2-3 months of practicing and going through the pain of sounding terrible and actual physical pain of like creating calluses on my fingers, after that, it was like, oh, a chord. It sounded good. And I can do this other chord, and that sounds good. And I can switch between these 3 chords. And now with these 3 chords, I can play a song. In fact, I can play a lot of songs using these 3 chords. And like, you start to gain some confidence in those areas. But the problem is, most people will never build the calluses in any activity. I'm not just talking about guitar, and I'm like applying this to anything else. They won't build the calluses of facing enough rejection to figure out how to make the door-to-door thing happen, or to figure out how to get their real estate investing career off the ground, or to figure out how to build their carpet cleaning business, or whatever it is. Like, they people give up before the calluses form. And the common denominator between everybody that's ever been successful is they don't give up before the calluses, you know?
Let's talk about that give up moment then, because some people might, whether it's guitar, podcasting, door to door, no matter what it is, at some point they are going to have that thought that you highlighted where they might think, maybe this just isn't for me. And if we know that we need to fail and we need to not give up to actually reach the next level, well, how do we not give up? Is it as simple as just do it, don't give up? Like, what does it feel like for you in that moment? And how do you get your mindset back on the target so you don't actually give up?
Yeah, first off, it's just trying to get clear on if you want it bad enough. Because sometimes the goal isn't worthy. Sometimes the goal is not worthy of the pain. And if you don't have clarity around where you're headed in that sense, then of course you're going to give up because it's not worth it to go through that pain. And like, so there's been some things where that I've tried them and that I've, you know, taken my skills to for a little bit. And it just like, wasn't worth the pain to me. And I stopped them. You know, it, like quitting isn't always a factor of laziness. Sometimes quitting is a good thing. You know what I mean? Like quitting gets a really bad rap because most people don't need help quitting. You know what I'm saying? But sometimes quitting is a good thing. In fact, like in the past, like decade, man, since I was 21, since I came out of college, I've probably done 14 different things in terms of like different ways to try to make money, different businesses, different network marketing companies I jumped into, different door-to-door companies I jumped into, different things that I tried to sell. You know, there's so many things that I've tried and attempted and quit on relatively quickly. But it's because as soon as I figured out that I didn't want that thing, I stopped doing that thing. I didn't force the square peg into the round hole. I just found a round peg. You know what I mean? And that's why the podcast now is like the single thing that I've done for the longest thing. Like it's the only thing I've ever done longer than 2 or 3 years is the podcast. And we're coming up on year 7 of the show. And we just released an episode like 904 or something. And it was like, yeah, there's a lot of pain involved with that. Yeah, there's a lot of rejection involved with that. Yeah, there was plenty of times that I've considered quitting the show so many times. But at the end of the day, I have clarity around the fact that I want to still be a podcaster regardless of the outcome. I, like we talked about at the beginning of this, the Swiss Army knife effect of podcasting. There's so many reasons why I enjoy podcasting that even if I didn't get paid a single dime for it, I'd still continue to do it. And so for me, like the goal was worthy enough to push through the pain. And so that's the first thing is like, you have to figure out, is the goal worthy enough? And then secondly, you got to commit to the goal. Regardless of the result, you got to commit to the work regardless of the result and put a time limit on it. Again, I'm not a crazy person. Sometimes you got to take like Mr. O'Leary, like Kevin O'Leary on Shark Tank always says, sometimes you just got to take this idea behind the barn and shoot it. You know, like sometimes it's like, some, like you've been working on this business for 7 years and you're still in debt and it's still bank. Like you're still doing like, okay, maybe the market's telling you something, you know what I mean? So you can't be just blindly, you know, persistent and to the point where you're like bucking market trends to try to get your idea to spread. Sometimes you got to take the idea behind the barn and shoot it. And so for me, it was like, I have an idea of the goal. The goal is worthy. Now I make a commitment. And that commitment for me at that time was 2 years. I said, I'm going to put out 3 podcasts a week for 2 years. If at the end of 2 years, I have nothing to show for this and nothing's going the way that I want it to go, then at that point I'll reconsider. And at that point I'll switch things. It doesn't mean I'll quit necessarily. Maybe I'll just switch the name of the show. Maybe I'll switch the niche of the show. Maybe I'll go to 1 a week instead of 3 a week. Maybe I'll go up to 5 a week. Like something might change, but for the next couple of years, I'm just going to work on this consistency piece and see what happens after that. And it took almost the full 2 years to get me like positive feedback that I was doing something right. Like it was pushing my time limit by quite a bit. But that's honestly what it is a lot of times, man. It's like people make decisions off of way too small of a sample size. Mm. It's like, oh, I'm going to do this podcast, you know, for a while. And then it's like, they do 6 episodes. And they're like, oh, I'm not Joe Rogan. I guess I should just quit. You know what I mean? Because I'm just no good at this. It's like 6 is just not enough to make an informed decision. You don't have enough data. You know what I'm saying? Like you don't have near enough data to be making a decision like this if you truly want the end result. So for me, it's like, I truly want the end result. Then I commit to like giving it a real shot. And that commitment's counterintuitive, man, because you would think that commitment prevents you from having freedom. But within commitment lies true freedom. Within discipline structures lies true freedom. And what I mean by that is, like, if you are fully committed to putting out 3 episodes a week for 2 years, and you're coming up on a dry week, meaning like you are maybe 2 weeks away from running out of content, and you're like, oh man, I gotta record more content. If you didn't make the commitment and you're not getting any downloads and your life isn't changing and nobody's listening to your show and you think you're talking to nobody when you're speaking in your microphone, you let all those voices in your head start creeping up, they're immediately just going to start telling you, like, why are you going to worry about going and getting new interviews booked then? Just don't worry about it. This thing's costing you $600, $700 a month in production costs. You know, it costs you a bunch of time. You're spending 15, 20 hours a week on this. You're not getting any return on your time. You're not making any money. What are you doing? Stop doing this. And if I didn't make that commitment from the very beginning, then it'd be really, really easy to fall prey to those things. But that's why I say within commitment lies true freedom, because if you are truly committed, then you figure it out. When your back's up against the wall, it's not an option to not do it. There was plenty of, like, personal struggles that were going on in my life, like things that, you know, my wife and I grew up the same way. And so, like, when we were like leaving this whole religious tradition thing, like, we had some really big issues in our marriage. You know, we're high school sweethearts. We were on the same page in everything. And then all of a sudden we weren't. There was a lot of things that we were talking about during that time, but still every single week I put out 3 episodes. You know what I mean? Like, in addition to going door to door and making money and making sure my bills are taken care of, I'm still putting out 3 episodes. I'm still paying for coaching. Like, I'm still going to masterminds. I'm still attending events. I'm still going to conferences. I'm still trying to learn. I'm still trying to grow. And I'm still dealing with all this personal stuff on the side. Then my wife ends up losing her dad at 53, and we're in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and we're dealing with personal issues. I didn't miss a release during any of that time because the commitment was made. And then if I do all of that work and it gets to the end and I still don't, and I don't like it, or there's something about it that doesn't click with me, or it's not resonating with me, or whatever, then at that point, cool, you can let it go. You have my permission to let it go, but you got to give it a real shot. You know what I mean? I knew, like, 2 years of 3 a week, that's basically 300 podcast episodes. Like, if I did 300 podcast episodes, I have a pretty good idea if I want to continue doing podcast episodes, you know? So yeah, for me, it was just that. And don't feel bad if you give up on something. That doesn't necessarily make you a quitter. Just make sure that you're not giving up on it before you get a good sample size, and you're not giving up on it if it's something that really truly matters to you. Because if it does truly matter to you, I can promise you, if you stay in it and make it happen, it's worth the effort that you put into it. It's worth the pain that you're going through.
Amen to that. And I'm biased, but I think podcasting's a winner's game, because we'll talk about skills in a second. But it's true. I can run really fast, and if I'm running in circles, am I going to finish my mile? I'm just running in circles. I'm a dog chasing their tail. I'm probably going to want to quit that and find an actual target to run towards. Yeah. Podcasting, you're not running in circles. Talk about, like, so we're going to breeze over 7 years, right?
Yeah.
How did it change your life as an entrepreneur, as a man, as a communicator, as a content creator? Like, even if you didn't make a penny off podcasting, I assume you learned some stuff, right?
Yeah. So primarily, easily, number one is my network. So I started a show called Build Your Network, and then unintentionally found the number one way to network, which was starting my podcast. So it was funny because, like, you know, in the podcasting space, when you become a guest on other shows, you know, they tend to ask you questions about the topic that you talk about on your show. Pretty natural, right? So people start asking me, like, hey, what's your number one networking tip? And, like, how do you get in front of blah, blah, blah? And I started giving these, you know, kind of generic answers that I was kind of hearing online and regurgitating, and just, you know, being like, oh, you got to add value, and you got to think long term, and you got to delay gratification. And I was giving all these kind of, you know, things. And not to say that those were incorrect. Those are all, you know, definitely true. But throughout the process, it just kind of dawned on me. I was just like, wait a second. If I were really to boil it down, like, to one activity that has completely, completely changed the quality of the people that I get to talk to, the number of people that I can text in my phone, that are, you know, people who get paid thousands of dollars an hour to consult and things like that. If I were to boil it down to one thing, it would be my podcast. Like, not even close, it would be the fact that I have my own podcast. That completely changed my network, is just having the show. So
and
that
humbly,
by itself.
Humbly name drop some of the people. I should have done it in the intro. You've had some incredible people on your show that probably would have never wanted their brain picked, and now you got to make friends with them. Some of the people who've been on the show, name drop some of them.
So, I mean, the biggest one is I got to talk to my childhood hero on the show over a year and a half ago now, and that was Shaquille O'Neal. And I played a lot of basketball growing up. Basketball's my favorite sport. I'm from LA County. Lakers are my team. I watched Shaq and Kobe Lakers. Still my favorite team of all time was the Shaq and Kobe Lakers. Shaq was my favorite player. I had jerseys, I had bobbleheads, I had paintings. Like, I had everything that you could have with Shaq. So that was a super cool full circle moment. And then he followed me on Instagram, and he's replied to my stories a couple of times. Like, I doubt he would recognize me if I saw him in person, you know? But like, enough to where he still follows me and still like comments on stuff sometimes or whatever. So that was super cool. And then some other people, Dane Cook was really like, he's turned into somebody that's actually really just a really cool guy, really kind, generous with his time. We talk fairly frequently now. We text fairly frequently now. Rob Dyrdek was an awesome interview. We didn't really like connect much afterwards, but it was a really great interview, and didn't think I'd ever be able to talk to somebody like him either. But then besides that, man, it's just like authors, millionaires, multimillionaires, a couple billionaires, athletes, influencer, like just so many people that I was just like, this person's never gonna give me the time of day. Then we sit down for an hour and a half podcast, and by the end of it, we're like legit friends, you know what I mean? So, and it doesn't happen with every single guest, but a lot of them it does, you know, and you don't need it to happen with every single guest. In fact, it's probably better, you know, because you're going to connect with the people that are more your people anyway. And when you sit down and have an hour plus conversation with somebody, you kind of find out if we're kind of, you know, each other's people during that time. So it's a discovery process in and of itself. It's a relationship building process in and of itself. And it's led to some amazing relationships, a lot of which I can credit some of the business success that I've had too, because they've been willing to give me free advice. Like I said, sometimes some of these people, you know, these are people who've exited companies for really large sums of money, like Harvard MBAs type people who used to work on Wall Street and then became an entrepreneur and then sold this company for this much. And then, you know, started these next three companies and exited all of them. Now they have a private equity fund or whatever. And like, I'm just a podcaster with a unaccredited Bible degree who used to do before. And I'm jumping on a call and they're just answering whatever questions I have. And like I said, like most people would pay them a lot of money for that. Like these are people that charge six figures plus for one-on-one coaching, you know, one-on-one executive coaching every year. And I've jumped on a dozen calls with them in the last like 12 months, 14 months, just totally for free because we built a friendship, a real like relationship. And man, that stuff's, it's priceless. It's priceless. So the number one thing is definitely the network in terms of what the podcast has done besides, you know, audience or followers or sponsorship revenue or whatever. Number two thing I would say would be knowledge. It's like the best accountability tool for increasing my knowledge base. I've read more books in the last 3 or 4 years than I've ever read in my life because I feel this obligation to my audience to continue to provide the best quality content that I can. And so I'm always I'm expanding my knowledge all the time. But I wouldn't be doing it nearly as aggressively if I didn't have this like public accountability tool to making sure that I don't sound like a moron when I open my mouth and I'm talking. You know what I'm saying? So I tend to read a lot more. I've read all the top 10 plus books on networking, building relationships, you know, empathy, how to communicate with people, all the things related to my topics, that's for sure. You know, became deeply educated in those things. And then plus, I'm interviewing the best and the brightest people, like we just talked about. So I just get to ask them questions that I'm curious about for an hour plus. And the retention in information that I gather from a conversation is, to me, significantly higher than it is when I'm just reading it off of a piece of paper or listening to it on an audiobook, because it's an engaging, thoughtful conversation. And so I tend to remember those things more often. So yeah, my knowledge base, the things that I've learned, the way that I've grown, I think is all directly correlated to having the podcast as well. So, you know, network, absolutely. Knowledge, for sure. Communication skills, I would say, is a big one. When I first started, I had no idea how to interview somebody. I was terrible at asking questions. I didn't know how to transition from conversation to conversation. And this is after speaking on stage my entire childhood. You know what I mean? So I was already communicating a ton. I'd spoken on stage more than most people. you know, and certainly our church was not a small church either. So we had, you know, thousands of members at our church. So when I spoke in front of like our church and stuff, I was speaking in front of real crowds, you know, like I preached in front of our church when I was 15 for like a teen takeover service, you know. It was a Wednesday night, so it wasn't like the Sunday morning crowd, but Wednesday night it was probably still 1500 people in there. You know, wow. What I mean? That wow. I spoke to when I was 15. So wow. There, I had a ton of experience in those things, but translate that into being a interviewer. It was not a relevant skill at that point, because being an interviewer is all about being an active listener, not being a good talker. And so I had to get really good at listening to people, asking insightful questions. How do I form my questions? How do I make this person look good? How do I extract the best possible content from this person that I can? And that skill by itself is a very, very valuable skill to take into multiple aspects of life, not just being a podcast interviewer. It helps so much with relationship building, with communication, in your interpersonal relationships, to be thoughtful, to ask good questions, to be a good listener, an active and curious listener, to have empathy for somebody else's side of the situation, or to try to put yourself in somebody else's shoes during a conversation and try to see the world through their eyes. Those soft skills, man, are just so vitally important to being a well-rounded and thoughtful individual, communicator, leader, teacher, parent, husband. Like, all those things benefit from working on that skill over and over again. So that would be another one that I'd throw in there as well.
Networking, education, communication skills, being a better human overall. Mm-hmm. And talk about Guestio, because podcasting is a big part of how you make money as well. And
yeah,
I'll be the first one. I signed up for Guestio. You guys paid me. I got some Guestio cash, and I went and I got on like 10 podcasts in a week. Now, granted, I'm good at pitching. You can send me a DM. You can send Travis a DM if you need help pitching. But yep. I jumped on Guestio and got on 10 podcasts in a week. It was pretty easy, man.
Nice, man. I love hearing that. Love hearing that. Yeah.
And I've gotten paid. And I've gotten paid by Guestio members.
Even better.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah. Even better.
So talk about that.
Yeah. So Guestio exists to do exactly that, connect podcast guests and podcast hosts. So there's a software version, and there's also a concierge version, which is really the majority of where our revenue comes from is our concierge. We work with high level entrepreneurs and authors and people like that. We represent them. We get them booked on podcasts. And then we also for a while did some production work and podcast consulting work. So like everything that I do now is stemmed from the podcast in some way. So I'm kind of the opposite of a lot of like business podcasters you listen to. Like, my podcast existed first, and then I started businesses off of the back end of having my podcast. There's a lot of people like had their businesses and then started the podcast after their business, or after they sold their business, or during their business, or whatever. And so, my businesses are, you know, tightly related to the podcasting industry and to me having a podcast in the first place. So yeah, to say starting my podcast changed my life would be, you know, the understatement of my year.
Mm-hmm. And you're preaching to the choir, because I started a podcast and I started a marketing firm that had nothing to do with podcasts, but podcasting was that marketing channel to get, you already explained it well, that actually funneled opportunities into the marketing business. So Guestio.com, it's really that simple, right?
Guestio.com, man. Yep, it's very simple. You can set up a free profile as a guest or a show or both, and not have to pay anything if you just want to set up your profile. If you want to actively like pitch and reach out to people, then I think it's $97 a month for pro right now. But Guestio.com, guest, like be my guest, IO, Guestio.com. You can sign up for a free account there today.
It's in the notes. Message Travis, message me. I can, you know, make an intro to the EA, get you guys into Guestio. But we're going to do the short version. I promised it, so I want to tackle it. We talked about some of the nosebleeds, some of the things required to be successful, some of the things you've learned. Let's simplify it in 3 minutes. So do you want to do guesting on shows or hosting a show? Which one should we tackle?
We talked a lot about podcasting, so maybe we talk about the guest side.
So I listen to Ben's show. I want to be on Ben's show. I don't want to start my own podcast. I want to be a guest. In 3 minutes, how can you ensure that I'm not going to fail?
Yeah. So first off, you gotta come up with a good pitching strategy. And so a lot of times that involves setting up like a media bio or a one sheet or like something that you can send to somebody where they can make a decision on you based on, you know, high level accomplishments, connections, things that you've done, you know, social following and stuff like that. So that's, you know, something that on Guestio you can do for free. That's what I meant by set up your profile for free, because you can go on there to guestio.com and you can like set up your guest profile. So you can see a copy of mine on app.guestio.com/Travis. It shows you like an example of like what we send to people when we pitch. And it's just, you know, my picture, it's got my media bio, it's got past podcast appearances, it's got articles that have been written about me, it's got my social links and channels on there, you know, people I've connected with. It's got a bunch of just all the information that a show host would need to decide whether or not they want me to come on their show. Once you have the media bio and or one sheet or whatever you want to call it down, then it's a matter of finding shows to pitch. So there's a number of different ways to do that. You can, you know, just start Googling it, or you can go to Guestio or Podmatch or Matchmaker. There's a few other sites out there where you can find shows that are actively looking for guests. And then you start pitching those shows. And then it matters what you say in the pitch, without going too much into it, because we don't have a ton of time. I would say the best thing is like, keep it short, sweet, and to the point. You don't want to waste people's time. I sometimes get these like books in my email, man. I'm just like, there's no way I'm reading through all of this right now. I'm trying to get to inbox zero, people. You know what I mean? So I actively encourage people, like, if you want to put more information in there, put it in your bio, put it in your profile, your one sheet, and then link to that. If they want to go read more, they can read more, but don't waste their time in their inbox. So it really is as simple as that. In fact, we have an entire guide on this, totally for free, no opt-in required. It's on our website on guestio.com. That's like gives people like the quite literally, A to Z steps from start to finish on how to get booked on podcasts. So, you can find that at guestio.com. It's completely for free. Like I said, no opt-in. And it's a very long, in-depth article on like every single step of the process, tools to use, software to use. If you're sending emails or if you're doing, you know, using software tools or whatever the case is, there's a ton of really good information in that. So you can find that at guestio.com.
Boom. Get the freebie, guys. This'll be fun. If you want and you already know me, pitch me. Send me a DM. I'll let you know what your pitch looks like. Pitch Travis, inbox zero. He might not read it, but he will send it to his team. But yeah, man. And Travis Makes Friends. That's the name. That used to be Build Your Network. Now it's Travis Makes Friends, correct?
That's it. That's the one. Yes, sir.
I'm subscribed. They're about to smash. The best way you can support this show is support the people that come on this show. So smash the link for Travis Makes Friends. Thanks for your time, man. It flew by. I wish we had another hour together, but we'll talk soon.
I appreciate it, dude. Hey, thanks so much for having me, man. Thanks for coming prepared and asking good questions. It was fun.
Be well, boss. Oh, hey, you're still here. Thanks for listening. If you need to take off, that's quite all right. I do have something brand new and exclusive to share. If you believe more hands-on training, peer accountability, and direct access to some of our guests from this very show would be a helpful addition to the podcast, do me a favor and head over to growgettersonly.com. That's grow, G-R-O-W, getters, G-E-T-T-E-R-S, only. growgettersonly.com. Here you can unlock instant access to exclusive high-level mentors, training, networking, accountability, and hot seat coaching alongside fellow growth-obsessed entrepreneurs and business professionals just like yourself. All for, guess what? $1. That's right, $1 for 30 days. What's a grow-getter? In short, a growth-focused individual, especially in the business realm, who combines the relentless energy of a go-getter with a constant pursuit of self-improvement and collaboration. Is that you? Head to growgettersonly.com for some community support. This is not for you if you're looking for a quick fix rather than long-term growth. Collaboration and learning from others just doesn't seem to appeal to you. You're not ready to be part of a community that relentlessly pushes boundaries. Complacency is your comfort zone. It's not for you. If it is for you, and if you didn't turn this off yet, I do presume you're a grow-getter. And I'd love to invite you to join my new collective, Grow-Getters Only. Basically, cost to check it out, $1 for a month. It's basically free. Everything is over at growgettersonly.com. Just like I said, growgettersonly.com. Oh, yeah. And one last thing. We do put on free events as well if you can't afford the dollar. Jokes aside, I'll see you on the inside. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you.